Cairo Nights, day before Thanksgiving special. It's a real honor and a privilege to have you here. I'll tell you, you know, the day before Thanksgiving, it's important to recognize what we're going to say tomorrow around the dinner table when people say, what are you thankful for this year? I personally am very thankful for Brian Buckaloo, Mike Salk, our general manager Kathy, John Curley, all the people who have helped me in my radio journey. I'm very thankful to the management here at Cairo. They're all wonderful, wonderful people. And I'd also like to extend this to you guys as well. I'm very thankful for you as the audience as well. You know, we've had a lot of success here on Cairo Nights, and it means a lot to me that we have such a dedicated listener base, that we have people who listen 5 days out of the week. We have some people who listen for an hour. We have some people who listen to 2 hours. We have some people who listen to all 3 hours of the show. Some people are podcast only listeners. I am very thankful for all of you, and I just want you to know that I get to do my dream job because of you guys. So thank you all very much for that. So we're going to get to the Ahmaud Arbery case and the verdict on that, my various and sundry thoughts on that. We're also going to get to Bruce Harrell this morning on Seattle's Morning News. But before we get to all of that, I got to tell you, I got an update on that homeless woman who lives in the park near my house. So if you're just tuning in, if you have not heard in the rest of the story, it's been kind of spread out over the show the last about week or so. There is a woman who lives in the park near my house. She has a little structure that she's built in this park right around where all the workout stuff is. So like the pull-up bar and the dip bar and the gymnasium and all this stuff. She has her little Beverly Hillbillies house set up. It's basically pallets, like shipping pallets that have been constructed into kind of a rickety style home. And then underneath the pallets, the little lean-to that she's built is her tent. And then she has a little overhang to protect her stove, and then also the blowtorch that her boyfriend, comma, drug dealer uses to bend metal. And recently he actually has a chandelier that I'm assuming that he took from a dumpster. But every time I'm over there, he's using his blowtorch in the middle of this park to bend pieces of this chandelier into various and sundry shapes, these weird esoteric shapes. So that's what he does, because, you know, when you're on methamphetamine, you got a lot of free time. You got to fill it with something. So the first time I talked to this woman, she threatens to kill me, right? So I'm doing dips over at the dip bar, and I'm in my nice little running raincoat and my little running outfit, and I'm doing dips, and all of a sudden I hear someone yelling in the close nearby, and I go, well, that person can't possibly be talking to me. And then lo and behold, it is this woman, and she is threatening to kill me with a machete. And me, being an expert negotiator, I say, no, thank you. And she says, oh, okay. And then she zips up her tent. And that was our first interaction. Our second interaction was the following day. And she said hi to me. She said, hi. I said, hi, lady. And that's how we built our initial rapport. Now, day before yesterday, I finally have a conversation with this woman. I finally actually get an opportunity to chat with this woman. She is from out of state. She is from Texas. I won't say her name. I want to give her that respect. But she is from out of state. She moved here for work. Didn't really work out. She suffers from mental illness. And she's also heavily, heavily, heavily addicted to methamphetamine. Of course, she didn't admit that to me, but you can just kind of tell, right? You can just kind of tell when somebody is on that level of stimulants, and she's totally out of her mind. The conversation that we had the other day is, I say, hey, you know, are you thinking about getting services around here? Lots of places for you to go and get the help that you need if you want to get off the street, out of your little shack and away from drug dealer, comma, boyfriend, comma, amateur blowtorch artist. So there's a lot of resources out here for you to try to latch onto. And she said, well, they've been here and they've offered me services, but I can't get in. I said, why? And she says, well, I have scabies. I have lice all over my body. And then she says, they won't let me in because I have scabies. I don't trust the doctors around here. You know, she's on methamphetamine, right? So she's paranoid out of her mind. She's crazy out of her mind. She tells me all these reasons why she doesn't trust the doctors. You know, all this stereotypical meth addict type stuff, that they're going to put microchips in her, that they're going to track her, that she knows that there are doctors who are out to get her, stuff like that. And so I say, okay, well, I'm really sorry to hear that. So yesterday we were talking to Hannah Scott about it, and we came to the conclusion that permethrin cream was the thing to do. So after a long and exhaustive search, I finally got permethrin cream 5%, which is used to treat scabies, which is used to treat body lice. It was a long and exhaustive search. I finally did it. And so today I go down there. I'm working out. She just so happens to be there. And I say, hey. I said, hey, I got something for your lice. I got something for your scabies. And she says, what you got? And I said, well, it's this cream that they give everybody. And I hand her the it looks like a tube of toothpaste, basically, if you can imagine, about the size of a Colgate tube of toothpaste. On the side of it, it says permethrin cream, 5%. And she immediately gets all excited. She, oh, my God. She gets so excited, and she absolutely just inflates. And then she immediately gets very suspicious. And she says, you open this? She gives me the evil eye. She's squinting at me. She gives me the old stink eye, as we like to call it. She's squinting. She goes, you open this? I go, no. I said, no, I don't need it. She's squinting at me. She goes, you sure? I don't know why I did this, but I looked at my hands, and then I looked at her, and I went, I did not open the tube of cream. And then she screws off the top to make sure that the little piece of tinfoil is still on the top of the cream. And then she sees it, and she nods her head approvingly, and then she screws the thing back on. And I said, listen, will you try to use the cream? Because, you know, I understand if you don't want to try to get into housing, and I understand if you like living out here with your drug dealer boyfriend / amateur blowtorch artist, but do me a favor and just use the cream. Use it. Just get rid of the scabies so that you don't have them bugging you anymore. And she said that she would think about it, which is a big improvement from where we were a week ago when she was threatening to kill me with a machete. We went from, I'm going to kill you with a machete. I'm going to cut your head off with a machete. We went from that to now she's thinking about using the cream that I gave her. And it made me think about how far I've come personally, because obviously I'm a very selfish person, but it made me think about the little gestures that people did for me over the course of my drug addiction, over the course of my life, trying to get from being homeless to trying to get back into college and getting off of drugs and then eventually getting my radio career. I think that we need to recognize more that it's little gestures like that that potentially could make a difference in somebody's life. Now, it's not always the case. I'll tell you another story. Many years ago, must have been about 10 years ago, maybe 9 years ago, for whatever reason, I got it in my mind that I wanted to do more charity type stuff. I was still a degenerate drug addict at the time, right? So I didn't have tons of money. But I thought that to assuage my guilt around being a cocaine addict and a heroin addict, that every Sunday I would wake up and I would go to the local Trader Joe's. This is in California. And I would buy a couple of bags of tangerines, a couple dozen Clif bars, and some water bottles. And I would try to find homeless people in my community that looked like they were down on their luck. This was just my idea of being charitable to my community. And even more specifically, I wanted to find homeless kids. I wanted to find people, you know, kids that are like 18, 17, 18, 19 years old. And I wanted to give them some tangerines and some Clif bars and some water. And so I'm going around. I do this for many Sundays in a row. And I'm hucking around these two Trader Joe's bags. I'm going all over Monterey, handing out tangerines. I'm the candy man, right? I'm giving tangerines, Clif bars, water bottles. Tangerines, Clif bars. I'm giving to anybody, right? And I befriended this guy who I will refer to as Silver. That was his homeless person name. Everybody called him Silver. And he had one dead eye. He had one eye that was totally capped over. And he had this big old luscious silver beard. And he was really out of sorts. He was kind of an end stage homelessness. That's the stage of homelessness where someone kind of looks like the you remember the movie The Pirates of the Caribbean, the third one or the second one, where the pirates start to slowly blend into the ship? You remember that? Like they all turn into like sharks and octopuses and pieces of coral, and then eventually they become one with the boat. This was Silver. He was basically at the point in his homeless career where he was about to just fade into the street. I mean, the guy was filthy. I befriend the guy, and every Sunday I come along. I always save a Clif Bar, two tangerines, bottle of water for the guy every single time. So, you strike up conversations with people when you give them free stuff. You strike up, talking to the guy. He's a vicious alcoholic, can't get off the booze, goes to AA, goes to rehab. Nobody wants anything to do with him. Family doesn't want anything to do with him. Just totally down on his luck. At that point, nothing that I could do for the guy as a 24-year-old drug addict other than give him a Clif Bar and two tangerines and a water bottle. So I one Sunday in particular, this is the last time that I ever did this. I go to give him the food that I purchased for him, and I had done this for him for many, many weeks. I go to give it to him, and I hand it to him, and he's very, very, very thankful. He's very appreciative, as he always was. And he says, "God bless you." And I say, "Thank you very much, Silver." And as I'm walking away, I get maybe 10 yards away from him. And then I realize that I've got a couple more tangerines, a couple more Clif Bars, and I'm basically done for that morning. So I'm going to turn around and I'm going to give the rest of them to him and try to, wish him the best of luck for the week. And as I turn around, I see him take the food that I've just given him, and he throws it away. The Clif Bar, the tangerine, the water bottle. And he throws it away. He's just right into the trash can. I'm maybe 30 feet away from him, And I see it, and my heart just shattered. It just broke right there, right? And I thought, why didn't he tell me he didn't want it? Why didn't he tell me that he just wasn't interested in it? I don't know, maybe he was trying to humor me or something like that. But I say that to say this. I think that the fine people of Seattle, no matter what, how much money is in the budget, no matter how many services, no matter blah, 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 blah. I think many people in Seattle and the surrounding areas, they feel like a one Jack Stein, right? They feel like one Jack Stein all those many years ago where you feel like for a decade, you've been dumping money into this problem. You say, we'll set aside certain portions of this space that you guys can set up your tents in. Well, I guess we will we'll pass some stuff to kind of handicap the police a little bit so they don't mess with you guys. Okay, well, we'll decriminalize some drugs or whatever to try to make it a little bit easier on the homeless people. Well, we'll just let crimes of poverty slide, right? We'll just let that slide. And I guess we'll spend $28.5 million on a hotel so that we can house these people. And then I guess we'll make a tiny house village for all these people. And then I guess we'll dump hundreds of millions of dollars all of the time over and over and over again into this problem to try to fix it. I think that many people are at that point in their relationship to the city and the surrounding areas. Like, they're just kind of like, we've just done all this so many times, you guys. And maybe it's time. I'm just going to throw this out there. Maybe it's just time, as I have said many times on this show, clear out the parks. Don't let people sleep in the parks. You clear off the sidewalks. You don't let people set up shacks on the sidewalk. And you let the rest just kind of unfold as it will. I read the other day, we're talking about the lawnmower man and how I think it's We Love Seattle went out there. We Heart Seattle went out there. And they moved all the guy's stuff, and they got him into housing, and they were trying to help the guy. I think now, maybe we need to recognize that you can have all these like wraparound services, and you can do all this stuff, but there's a certain degree of community involvement, I think, where we can't let our resentment of the crime and the viciousness get the better of us. And what I mean by that is that there are still homeless people out there who could legitimately use the services that are provided to them. I talk about this all the time. I think that if we make the distinction between predatory homelessness and homeless people who would actually be very thankful and very grateful for the services that are provided to them, we would be better off. Identifying frequent flyers. We talked about this with Matt Markovich the other day. Identifying people who are abusing the system. Identifying people who are frequent flyers in the legal system. If we could get some of these little pieces straightened out, almost like a game of Jenga or something like that. If we could make sure that there are certain pieces in the right place when it comes to our judicial system or when it comes to the services that we offer homeless people. the tower would stand, right? And it would be sturdy. And I think now what we have is like this weird discombobulated, you know, different wooden bricks all over the place, and people are putting in pieces and taking out pieces, and what are we going to do about the budget and blah, blah, blah. And it's just not working anymore. So I guess, you know, today when we're thinking about being thankful and we're thinking about appreciating what we have tomorrow with friends and family, maybe if we remembered that we are so close to being there. I think many of us forget how close we are to being like that woman who lives in the park by my house is addicted to meth. We're, at least in my mind, we're all so close to that life. And the more that we recognize the importance of family, faith, community, these important things, the further away we get from that life. You know, the more that we have strong friendships, the more that we have strong family connections, the more that we have strong communal connections, like a church or some social group or a, I don't know, a mom's jogging club, I don't know, call it whatever it is. The more pillars that we have, the further we get away from that kind of a life. I like to think that by going up to that homeless woman today and offering her that tube of permethrin cream, that I am extending an opportunity for her to have a pillar, if that makes sense. Like, I am extending the opportunity for her to take care of herself in the smallest of ways. And maybe that is the thing, combined with everything else, that will eventually get her out of that ramshackle tent with blowtorch boyfriend. Like, maybe that little, you know, you never know what it is, but that little nudge, that little act of kindness, maybe that's the thing that eventually helps somebody. Or maybe it's one of the rocks that adds up to eventually become the pillar in somebody's life to convince them to get off the street. So that's what was on my mind today. I appreciate everybody indulging me as we moved through that. Again, I'm very thankful for this job. I'm very thankful for all the listeners. Very thankful for Shane Peterson. Very thankful for Lisa Brooks. And we have a very special show for you coming up right after this. Dr. Z is going to be coming on. And my therapist told me that I should take mushrooms. Find out why right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. On the line, as per usual, is our very good friend, Dr. Z. William Zanenti, MD, PhD, Silver Fox, and all-around A-plus guy. Dr. Z, we got a listener email that we have to get to, and we're also going to talk about a conversation that I had with my therapist, as you like to say, being from Pennsylvania. Dr. Z, why do you think that is, that Pennsylvania people have that particular drawl to their voice? You have it, and Billy has it.
What? I'm from New York, my man.
Yeah, but you say therapist and orange, and that's the same thing that Billy says.
Therapist and what?
You don't say orange, you say orange.
Orange?
Okay,
orange.
Never mind. I'm mixing up you and Billy, but you do say therapist. Anyway, we're wasting everybody's precious time, and it's my fault. So this is from a listener. His name is Michael. And he says, hello, Dr. Z. I caught the last part of a discussion that you were having with Jack Stein, spelled wrong, the other night, and was looking for more information. Sounded like using Flonase and something else before bed. I have sleep apnea, and I'm looking for alternatives to a CPAP machine. Thank you for your time. Again, that's from Michael. So, Dr. Z, the advice that you gave to me back in the day, when I was complaining to you about sleep, is you told me to take allergy medication, basically, and like 24-hour allergy medication, and also use Flonase because it opens something up. Can you explain the science to all the fine people out there?
Sure. So I was trained during neurology clinic with the sleep doctors that would join us as well. The advice when we pick up on sleep apnea is to give this patient Flonase because it can not only open up the sinuses, but also shrink the tonsils because, you know, it's a topical steroid that you're inhaling through your nose. And if you have obstructive sleep apnea, you have laxity of a constricted airway, meaning that, you know, the uvula that's always exemplified in the cartoons when somebody's yelling or singing?
Yeah.
Right? So the uvula hangs down, and to the flanking the uvula is the soft palate that leads to the posterior part of your throat, and just below that is your tube for breathing. And so if you have a smaller airway that is somewhat restricted, your tongue can more easily fall in front of that, usually worse with alcohol or benzodiazepines, because when you go into REM sleep, and by the way, REM is all you need. You don't need any of that, you know, that mild sleep or that deep sleep. You really need the REM. And when your body goes into REM, you experience full body paralysis with the exception of your eyes darting around because you're dreaming, and your tongue will fall in front of your airway and wake you up. And you may not wake fully up and regain full consciousness. So this could be going on and you don't know it. And commonly somebody may tell me, oh, I don't have sleep apnea. I have insomnia, because sleep apnea causes an aversion to sleep and your body knows it. And it starts fighting you to go to sleep. The other thing I hear is, oh, I sleep 12 hours. I have no sleep problem.
Right.
Sleep is like a currency. If you don't get enough, you're always looking for more. And so, yes, Michael, you could do the Flonase and a non-drowsy antihistamine like Zyrtec, Allegra, or Claritin, and that could be very helpful. If you require CPAP, don't try to get away from it. Try to do your best to work with it, because long-term untreated obstructive sleep apnea will put you first in line for early dementia. And that's no joke. And it will worsen every other medical problem. Remarkably, people with type 2 diabetes have a greater need for medications if they also have untreated sleep apnea.
All right. So, Dr. Z, you feel good about that answer? Because I want to talk about me, because I'm really important.
Yeah, I think I did it. But I just wanted Michael to know, if you need it, don't discount. Try it out. Try the Flonase and the non-drowsy antihistamine, but don't, you know, just dismiss CPAP if you need it. The Flonase and the non-drowsy antihistamine can also help the CPAP work easier. I can also help somebody to have the CPAP work easier. There's all kinds of ways to do it.
So, Dr. Z, you recommended a CPAP to me, and speaking of recommendations, my therapist recommended to me that I try microdosing. He told me that it might be a good idea for me for a couple of days. He said about a week, if I just take a little bit of the old magical mushroom, Dr. Z. And he said, don't get loaded on it, but take like a little dose of it. And it will help with your neuroplasticity. And I am skeptical about this, Dr. Z, because as you know, I did tons of heroin and tons of cocaine and tons and tons and tons of other illicit drugs. But I was never really all that interested in hallucinogens outside of the few times that I did ketamine and the one time that I did PCP. So I ask you, Dr. Z, as a literal brain doctor, should I consider maybe, like, because they're legal, well, they're not legal, but they're decriminalized where I live. Should I go ahead and try a little bit of the old microdose, Dr. Z, to increase my neuroplasticity?
Well, you know, remember what they said, feed your head. I think that's what Neil's getting at. Now, there's some good literature to suggest that it is beneficial, the psilocybin in particular. And, you know, there's some research going on. You can actually take some of these hallucinogens legally under the guidance of a therapist. No joke.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know, they're doing it in our town left and right. So, that is something that you can do. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think there's other ways to achieve your means, like getting a good night's sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. I've thought, Bill, you know, I've had so many, you and I often talk about dreams, right? I mean, you and I have had lengthy conversations about dream interpretation. And one of the things that I find is that when I have a good, that's maybe not the best phrasing, but when I have a very in-depth trauma dream, like about my dad or about my grandparents or about whatever it is, the next day I'm able to, even though it's a difficult subject matter to discuss, if I can talk about that dream with someone who is an open ear, who is willing to ask about the symbolism behind this thing or that thing and do a little dream analysis with me, I find that to be very, very productive in terms of processing and moving through difficult memories or traumatic memories. So I think that might also do me well, Bill, if I maybe just get some better sleep in my life.
I've been telling you that for years.
I know, and I always avoid it. I don't like the idea of a thing hooked up to my head, Dr. Z, like a machine. And then what I did, Dr. Z, is I made a fool out of myself because I borrowed Billy Sunshine's CPAP machine, which is calibrated to Billy Sunshine. It's not calibrated to me. And so I get it. I get it at my house, and I open up the box, and then I put it on, and it's just blasting air into my nasal pathways. It was a miserable experience. But Dr. Z, thanks so much for coming on. What are the deets, just in case anybody wants to ask you another question?
It's ZinantiMD.com, ZinantiMD.com. If you want to ask a question or make a comment, and maybe we can answer your question on the air.
Dr. Z, you're the best as per usual, and I hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving this year, Dr. Z, and thank you. I'm very grateful for you and taking time out of your very busy day to come on the show.
You too, buddy. Thank you.
We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this with some good news. To Cairo Nights. Shane, there's a common meme around Thanksgiving time, and the meme basically goes like this, that contentious conversations are going to happen around the kitchen table.
Not neat.
You know what I mean? That we're going to end up debating and fighting about Trump or about trans people, or your niece is going to stand up and she's going to say, I'm a lesbian. You know, like that meme that people always try to play into.
Yeah, there's always plenty of memes and, you know, people trying to poke fun at the fact that they don't like their families and they're being forced to hang out with them. I can understand.
So there's an article by The Coolest, and which is a website, as you know, Shane, that I go to every single day. I go to The Coolest for all my reading time, all my heavy hitting news. But they say they have 12 conversation tactics for surviving Thanksgiving dinner, and they're all pretty boring. The general gist of it, Shane, is to have good boundaries when difficult conversations come up, and that you don't always need to win or participate in a conversation that you don't like. So if your uncle, who's a racist, starts talking about the Ahmaud Arbery case, you can just put that into your Rolodex of reasons not to like your uncle, as opposed to having some kind of debate or fight. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I have plenty of people who are in my family and in my close friend group that I don't very think much fondness of them. But, you know, it's about the holidays and just getting along and figuring it out and not, you know, airing any grievances, because that's not really what this time is for.
Right. A thing that I like to tell people, Shane, and I learned this through years of therapy and going to see professionals, but accepting something is not always agreeing with something. And what that means is that I can like my mom, Shane, is kind of a racist. Like my mom, if she talks about Hispanic people, Mexican people, black people, she says, you know, the most backwards stuff you could possibly think about, you know, people of other ethnic origins. I accept that that's my mom,
I don't agree with it. And so when my mom brings it up, like when I was thinking about moving to San Diego many years ago, and she said, you don't want to move to San Diego. There's too many Mexican people there. I just accept the fact that my mom is a racist. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just accept it. I don't agree with it. I find it to be disgusting. But I'm not going to, you know, like, get in my mom's face and explain to her why she's a racist. I just leave it alone and I don't bring it up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have that sort of relationship with a few aunts and uncles that I know of for sure. But, you know, it also just depends on, you know, time and place as well. You know, obviously when you're at the kitchen dinner table at the family time, you know, somebody's bound to say something wild after having a few sherries on the holidays. So, yeah. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, don't let your family become the meme this holiday season. Like, reach out and be cordial with your family. Learn how to get along because, you know, you can't pick your family, right? You know, you could.
Shane,
this
is the exact opposite of the advice that I'm giving right now.
Well, I'm just trying to tell I'm telling people to just get along and be happy for the holidays. But I agree with you in the fact that, you know, there's times and places.
But what I'm saying, Shane, is that you are under no obligation to like the people that you are having Thanksgiving dinner with.
Yeah.
And you are under no obligation to stay there.
Yeah.
So if at any point in time you want to dip, I think you should dip. I think people put too much stress on themselves for Thanksgiving dinner, Shane. Like tomorrow, my mom is going to be here and it's going to be me, Sarah, my mom, and our friend Ian. We're all going to have Thanksgiving together. It should be really nice, but I don't really like my mom, and I don't really like being around my mom. So we're going to keep it really short before Mama J gets ushered away back to her, back to where she's staying. So I feel like you have to kind of work those things out in advance. Like Sarah was saying, what time do you want to have dinner? I said, we're going to have dinner at like 5:30. Mama J is going to hang out until about 7 o'clock. Oh my God, Mama J, look at the time. We all got to go to bed because everybody's been so tired from all the work we've been doing. You understand, Mama J, you haven't had a job since 1992. And so we will, that's the idea, right, Shane? Like that's the game plan. That's what we stick to. And there is no altering of that. And I think that's the best way to navigate a difficult Thanksgiving is just understanding when it both starts and ends and knowing at any point in time that you can end it if you so choose, which is something, Shane, that we will not be able to do in the next segment because we have to do the entire thing with Mr. Billy Sunshine, which I am sure. So, what are we going to talk about? Billy wants to talk about Ahmaud Arbery, so we're going to go over the Ahmaud Arbery case, and then we are also going to be talking about, you know what? We're going to leave that up for a surprise, and there's also a teaser. We're going to throw that in there for the 9:30 segment, which everybody should stick around for. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back after this.